This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and a belated very happy new year to our listeners. Today we continue in our years-long tradition of offering you an opportunity to send questions to us, and we answer them. With me today, as usual, Layla Mudin, who is our nutritionist in residence, and together we work to address your nutritional and health concerns, both in our practice in Manhattan as well as on this weekly podcast. So, first of all, Happy New Year. This is our first podcast of the year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Wow.
A rather frigid beginning to the new year here in the Northeast where we broadcast from.
Yes.
I was extra special bundled up on the way to work. I have about a mile and a half walk from the east side to the west side, and the winds were blowing. And
kudos to you for walking in this kind of brittle weather. Wow.
Yeah, well. You know, 14 degrees as I looked at the thermometer on Fifth Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was considerably less festive than during the Christmas season. A lot of hungover and burnout people headed miserably to work. But we're happy to be here. We're happy to start the year again because enough of leisure time and revelry. Mm-hmm. I had an opportunity to do a little traveling here, did a sort of heritage tour of some of the historical sites on the East Coast. I went to Arlington National Cemetery.
Wow.
I visited the Aeronautical Museum in Chantilly, Virginia, which really appealed to my inner 14-year-old.
Uh-huh.
Lots of amazing planes and rockets. And then we were in Williamsburg, which is a colonial city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the
gate. See any reenactments?
We did. So I saw people, were reenacting, both sort of the kitchen household stuff. There were some Continental soldiers at Yorktown nearby, who were doing some reenacting of, basically standing around in the cold, freezing in their tents. And you kind of develop an appreciation for what it was like in Valley Forge, during the winter, because winter was a time of kind of hunkering down and not fighting, because it's a little too cold to fight. And, of course, Washington crossing the Delaware on Christmas Eve, that was kind of daunting down there in Trenton, pretty.
And you probably thought you were going to catch warmer weather, huh?
Yeah, because we went south. We said, it's cold up north, but we're going to go south. And it was, about 5 degrees warmer.
Oh, my.
So, and then Jamestown, of course, and that's also a place where people underwent tremendous deprivation and daunting circumstances. They landed there in 1607, and a couple years later, only about a quarter of them had survived. They were ready to turn around and leave, and just when they were a contingent of them were leaving, they said, "To hell with this America thing. We're going back to England. It's the conditions here are horrible." They were actually engaging in cannibalism, not killing live people, but when people died, they said, "Well, here's some protein, let's eat that." And there are actually bones that have remains of butcher marks of butchery when they excavated Jamestown. Well, anyway, they turned around, and just as they turned around, a relief fleet arrived from England, and so then the colony survived. So that was an interesting historical note back in the early 1600s. There's beautiful museums down there. And I think, this is really mandatory for every American. Every American must do this. to kind of get a handle on our history. It wasn't the Mayflower that was the beginning. It was actually Jamestown. And before that, there was a place called Roanoke, which mysteriously...
Roanoke, Virginia.
Which mysteriously disappeared. It was in the 1500s, the late 1500s. They arrived there, and because of the... You ever hear of the Spanish Armada and that, you know, the 1588, the Spanish Armada fought the British fleet, mm-hmm. and England was fighting Spain. And because of that, they were not able to send relief convoys to that Roanoke colony.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they arrived there, there was no trace. There wasn't a trace. There wasn't a skeleton. There wasn't any residual. There were only some mysterious markings on the trees there, and the people had vanished. Now,
wow.
What happened to them? Were they abducted by Indians, or did they leave and assimilate with the Indians? It's unclear. The mystery of the disappearing Roanoke colony, the first attempted colony.
That's fascinating.
In the continental United States. So anyway, so great historical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In the news this week, and I think that you'll like this one, hospitalist tackles chronic disease with food pharmacies.
Yay!
Yeah, well, this story comes to us from the West Coast, a Dr. Nguyen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the correct one. It's N-G-U-Y-E-N. That's like Vietnamese, South Asian doctor. Who is probably raised in the United States, says, our initial attempts were as early as 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a number of stakeholders at the hospital, and we were able to pilot something at the hospital by 2015. We ended up having to move the food pharmacy out of the hospital into the primary care clinics, which ended up being great. We now have food pharmacies in 3 of our 14 primary care clinics.
Oh, wonderful.
And we plan to get going in 2 or 3, get going on 2 or 3 more by the end of the year. Currently, our focus is in patients with hypertension, a subject that we covered in depth.
Yes.
In a series of articles, last year. At the end of the year, we did a series on hypertension in view of the new guidelines that make more people concerned about hypertension. The patients are basically given healthy foods. They were offered food items that would be diabetic friendly. That did not mean we excluded all carbs, though.
Mm.
But when they received items from the food bank, such as potatoes, we would do education around what would be an appropriate serving size for a diabetic. So it was a teaching moment.
Bravo.
Several patients falsely thought they were forbidden to eat starchy foods. Well, it would have been better off if they were forbidden to eat starchy foods.
They should be forbidden.
But you know,
they're going in the right direction, which is encouraging.
It's incremental progress.
Yeah. And the fact that this is becoming part of primary care,
yeah.
the food pharmacy, that's where it belongs.
That's a revolution.
Everybody needs to have that visit with the nutritionist, with that person who's going to talk food.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's malpractice to treat hypertension without a nutritionist in the picture. It's been very well received by patients, says Dr. Nguyen. Being able to fill a prescription for food is just part of it. We have cooking demonstrations and nutritionists.
Wonderful.
We plug people into other food resources such as CalFresh, which is California's version of the food stamp program, or SNAP. WIC, Women, Infants, and Children program, local food pantries, home-delivered meal programs such as Meals on Wheels, which is really important for seniors because especially seniors who are maybe not that resourceful and poor, impoverished, Meals on Wheels is really great. There's a great sense of community among those who come. So for so many people, the messaging they got about nutritionists and healthy eating is negative. Don't do this, don't do that. Now we're offering positive messaging. Look how tasty your food could be, and here are some ways you can simply, quickly, and cheaply prepare these foods.
Yeah.
I thoroughly endorse this effort, and I really hope that it spreads like wildfire, that
I
becomes viral.
And a big focus on, and it's true, a lot of people don't like the visit with the dietitian nutritionist because they're going to be told everything they can't eat. But if we change the approach and talk about, look at all the wonderful food you can choose from, completely changes the response of the patient, the client, into not feeling deprived, but it becomes then a form of self-nurture.
Right. And we've had a food pharmacy here at the Hoffman Center for how long?
At least since I've been here, well, 2005, and, but and, you started and, before
and
be, then.
And before.
Yeah, and before.
Right.
And before. And
with your predecessors.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, finally, I think this wave is catching on, and we're excited that we were there at the inception. So let's tackle some questions. By the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. And we've accumulated a few over the holidays.
Yes, yes. We have an email from Gabby. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've read that salmon sold as sockeye or wild caught or product of Alaska in supermarkets may not be what the sign says. I like Bumblebee Wild Alaska canned sockeye salmon, which includes the bones, skin, and no added liquids. Would you recommend this as opposed to purchasing salmon sold as fresh in stores? Somehow, I feel the labeling on the can is more honest and accurate than that at the fish counter. Gabby, I understand what you're saying. It's all about finding a trustworthy seafood monger who says, yes, this salmon came from Alaska. This is wild Alaskan. It's not Atlantic. It's not some other other-sourced seafood.
And why is that distinction important? Because, I mean, Atlantic is a beautiful ocean and, you know.
There's so much toxicity, runoff from manufacturing, mercury, all of that kind of thing. Even with salmon, not so much because of their lifespan. However, farm-raised salmon is pretty dirty.
Right. And it partakes of more of the coastal waters and the effluents that are in the coastal waters.
Yeah.
And they're concerned about what the salmon eats.
Exactly. What the salmon eats and farm-raised, not only here, Atlantic, but even regions like Norway,
Scotland,
all of that. The farm-raised salmon there is really not much better and quite dirty.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be careful. The fish feed is not great at all, and that's why the salmon is far less healthy. Now, to get to Gabby's question about the most canned salmon, Gabby, but you were right.
Hang tight for a second, because I just while you were talking, I just dialed up a website, which is usaoceana.org, which has conducted a study. This was in 2015, and I think this may be what is spawning the, that's a good word when you're talking about salmon, spawning the concerns of this listener. Oceana reveals mislabeling of America's favorite fish, salmon. Mm. So what they're saying here is that they did DNA testing, because DNA testing is really the ultimate way of determining the provenance of fish. So some fish are even sold as counterfeit. You know, they say it's Chilean sea bass and it's like some other cheaper, you know, less endangered species. Or, you know, and I've experienced that. I've had some fish that, you know, it just wasn't right. So Oceana collected 82 salmon samples from restaurants and grocery stores and found that 43% were mislabeled. They said that most of the mislabeling consisted of farmed Atlantic salmon being sold as wild-caught product.
Yes.
Now, where did that happen? 48% of the samples in Virginia, 45% in Washington, D.C., 38% in Chicago, 37% in New York. Now, you go to the market, and I see this at, you know, even at a place like Whole Foods. On the one hand, you have this farm salmon. It's like $9.99. Like, how can you pass that up?
Mm-hmm.
And then right next to it is this wild-caught salmon.
$25.99.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, how are you going to pass up the opportunity to get such a tremendous discount? But I'm really trying to avoid the Atlantic salmon.
Yes.
The farm salmon, because I just don't want to put those toxins in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've discovered is that a couple places offer they seem to have a supply chain directly to Canada, and these are big companies, so it's got to be a reliable supply chain, because if they were outed as having counterfeit salmon, they would be in trouble. And the two places are Trader Joe's and Costco.
Yes.
And I've gotten coho salmon, which mm-hmm. is Alaskan. Mm-hmm. And what's another species of...
King.
King.
Silver Bright.
And it's not that expensive.
I like Trader Joe's.
$10.99.
Yes.
Maybe...
It's not bad.
$12.99
right.
a pound.
Right.
And
like
it's frozen. It's frozen.
Yeah, it's frozen.
It's not fresh. It's mm-hmm. very hard. Unless you're in the Northwest, it's very mm-hmm. hard to get fresh for less than 20 plus, upwards of $20 a pound.
That's true.
But now I've gotten used to the frozen. Mm-hmm. And so I pass by Trader Joe's and I get a bunch of that.
Exactly.
Keep in the freezer and then I thaw it out when I want it.
Exactly. Now, getting to Gabby's question about the canned, most canned salmon is wild from Alaska.
Right.
I like the fact that, yes, there isn't all these other ingredients like the broth with the hydrolyzed vegetable protein and sodium caseinate, which is a form of milk protein and other kinds of stuff. However, there is the issue of BPA.
Right, in the cans.
In the cans.
Yeah.
Because all those cans are still lined with plastic, mm-hmm. a thin coating of plastic, so
right.
that's a problem.
And Gabby, some, I noticed yeah. that some companies, I haven't seen it with salmon, but with mm-hmm. certain organic soup companies, they have BPA-free.
Yes.
The concern is that whatever they're substituting for the BPA, it may be as toxic
BPG
or more toxic.
BP, some other letter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, you know,
We got rid of the BPA. It's like the vaccines. We got rid of the mercury, but now we use aluminum.
Right. Great improvement.
Not to tread in an area that's so hot. But Gabby, so fine. If those are the ingredients, and most canned salmon is wild, but there is some exposure to BPA.
Right. And the other thing about canned salmon, it is canned, and it's like the consistency is different. And you can't make a salmon fillet out of that.
Right.
I mean, you can make salmon croquettes, really are nice from canned salmon.
Yep.
Which
salmon
are
salad.
Just delicious. And you can make them gluten-free. You need something to kind of glue it together, you know, give it consistency. So you can use rice flour or mm-hmm. you can use other flours, mm-hmm. Non-gluten flours. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and bottom line, you have to find a trustworthy fishmonger. And anytime you go to a restaurant, I never order seafood in a restaurant because I don't know where it's coming from. So I just don't order seafood in a restaurant. You don't want to order salmon from a restaurant because if they're saying wild Alaskan, they're not, but they're charging you for it. But another reason, if 37% has been misnamed as wild Alaskan, then you know that.
I must admit, I drove all the way from New York to Williamsburg in one night and we were like exhausted and we kind of looked for a place to eat. We rolled into a Denny's.
Ooh.
On Christmas Day. And it was kind of like a little messed up because the Christmas Day things are kind of crazy. And we sat down and we said, what are we going to eat here at Denny's? We're not going to have pancakes. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to have waffles. And we saw there was a delicious Alaskan wild salmon on the menu there.
Well, there you go.
And it came in a casserole with a bunch of vegetables. It was like, perfect. Mm. But the question is, was it real?
Exactly.
I did not have my DNA test kit with me, you know, but I was very happy to have it.
It was between that and the waffles and the pancakes.
Right.
You know? So what are you going to do?
Right.
That was still a better option. Oh my goodness.
I could have had the bacon cheeseburger, but you know.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, Gabby, we hope that answers your question. All right. Be on the lookout for a good fishmonger. Do go to Trader Joe. I agree. Their frozen salmon is absolutely...
And I got something else there.
And it's not too expensive.
I was there the other night and I saw frozen cod, which cod used to be the most plentiful fish.
Not anymore.
And it was responsible for the population explosion in Europe that happened after the Dark Ages, is they actually had better boats and mm-hmm. better fishermen, and they ventured further and further out into the Atlantic, and they found the cod beds, and they began fishing the cod beds way out in the Atlantic. This is even before they came to America. Mm-hmm. And they literally provided the protein that was the impetus to a population explosion in Europe. The net result, however, is that the cod has become virtually an endangered species, and it's very expensive now. It used to be the poor man's protein,
right?
Cod,
I
dried
grew up
cod,
on cod,
they call it bacalao, which is this like shoe leather thing that you reconstitute, and it stores really well. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, you know, speaking of this trip I took, is that the James River and the whole area down there was so rich in fish and wild salmon and shellfish that it was, you know, a whole different ecosystem than it is now.
Yeah.
With, you know, overfishing and pollution has changed that picture completely.
That's true. Yeah. Chesapeake Bay is quite polluted too.
Yeah.
They get all of Washington, D.C.'s.
It is a, and that is a huge waterway, the Chesapeake Bay. I mean, but it used to be pristine waters that were teeming with all kinds of fish and wildlife.
I grew up on cod. Cod and smelts.
Oh,
which
wow.
My mother used to pan fry.
You were an adventurous kid eating that. Cause
I had the greatest appetite.
Yeah.
Still do.
Okay. Well, that's why you became a nutritionist. Well, actually, the opposite is often the case is that we did this article in 2017 where a lot of nutritionists have eating disorders.
Yeah.
They're anorexic. And I think you are far from anorexic.
Yeah. No, I even, just to recap that a little bit, I could tell at least a couple of the students in my undergrad classes were absolutely, one woman, she didn't take off her coat the whole time.
Oh, okay.
That whole semester. So, yeah, kind of wonder about that. Okay. Next question we have from Steve. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I recently took my blood pressure while relaxed at home with an Acuren home monitor checked at my doctor's office. My pressure was 122 over 82. I'm 73 years old, a male, in reasonably good health. Have moderate physical activity, but should do more. I eat a Mediterranean/paleo type of diet. However, I definitely could use a few pounds. My question is, based on the new blood pressure guidelines, I'm in the elevated to stage 1 hypertension category. Should I be concerned with a pressure of 122 over 82?
Well, this is a really interesting question because at the same time that these guidelines were introduced, another competing organization, the Family Practitioners Medical Organization, issued different guidelines which suggested more leniency for the elderly. And once you're 75 plus, I guess you qualify as elderly. Although I'll hate the moniker when I reach that milestone, but that's a ways
off. By the time you get there, they'll push it to like 79, 80.
Yeah, right, exactly. So this guy's 82, and you know his blood pressure is really great, 122 over 82.
He's 73.
Oh, sorry, so 73. I'm sorry. His diastolic blood pressure is 82. Okay,
yeah.
He's 73. So these are youngin. But still, I wouldn't worry about it. I really wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what would be disastrous if, according to these new guidelines, some paint-by-numbers doctor saw that and said, well, you know, your blood pressure is a little high. I think I'll put you on a little blood pressure medication. What a catastrophe, because the side effects might cause wooziness, fatigue, lightheadedness. They could create a higher risk for a fall. And the concern is that in those older people, they're a little more fragile and more susceptible to
balance issues, falls, all of that.
And they have stiffened arteries. And when you use a blood pressure medication, it may have unpredictable effects, lowering the blood pressure too much, which causes a reduction in blood flow to the brain, which literally can cause brain brownouts. And that's a devastating
problem. Isn't that a bigger issue or problem?
Yes. Yes.
And doctors would be liable for this.
Well, they are. They aren't. With these new guidelines, they're protected. You know, if the patient falls down and breaks something, they say, well, I follow the guidelines.
What if the patient is behind the wheel of a car in the HOV lane on the LIE or something like that, and they brown out or something?
Follow the guidelines. Follow the guidelines.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So, you know, look, I'm not meaning to. I think most independent-minded and free-thinking doctors will interpret those guidelines with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. Again, a pun in blood pressure. But especially when applying it to the elderly, that you don't want to very aggressively lower blood pressure because you're not going to do the patient any good.
Yeah.
You want to avoid your very high blood pressure, but you also don't want to, that intermediate group, you want to be cautious and start with gentle lifestyle interventions first.
Right. Steve, do a little more
worry.
Cardio. Do a little more cardio.
Not to worry.
Don't have any caffeine. All right. Thank you for your question.
So we're reaching our time limit on part one of today's Q&A with Layla. Give us a preview, Layla, of what we're going to talk about in part two.
Oh, would niacinamide help type 1 diabetes?
Very interesting question, and we'll tackle that in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.